Thank you, Chair Smith and Commissioners. My name is Laura Hieronymus, and I've been recently brought on as the new Sturgeon, Smelt, Pike, Minnow Unit Lead out of the Region 5 office. And I'm joined here today with Cindy LaFleur, who is our Columbia River Federal Program Policy Coordinator. So I'll wait a minute and see if our PowerPoint comes up for you. We have one. So we're here today to present on the Lower Columbia River Sturgeon Stock Status and Fisheries Annual Review. And this is per Commission Policy C-3001. So today I'll review the current policy guidance, go through the stock status, touch on predation issues with pinnipeds, review the 2017 fisheries, and finish up with our next steps for 2018. The current policy guidance has been in effect since March 1st, 2014, and expires December 31st this year. There are a number of conservation and management objectives, and I've highlighted a few here which I thought were pertinent to the presentation today. First, to provide recruitment and regulatory protection to increase the abundance of the spawning population, to manage the fishery with a precautionary approach due to uncertainties in abundance estimates, to continue population monitoring within the available resources, and then there are three monitoring activities which have been highlighted in the policy, and those are the young of year sampling, evaluating the legal size abundance methods, and monitoring sea lion predation. And then finally, when fishery opportunities are available, the policy asks that we maintain viable and diverse fishing opportunities. And then the current policy does delegate authority of the fishery to the director for management. More recently, starting January 1st, 2014, retention of white sturgeon on the Lower Columbia River has been prohibited. And then in 2017, we were able to work with Oregon staff to manage, to develop and manage a small white sturgeon harvest. So I want to emphasize here, when I'm talking about the Lower Columbia River sturgeon, we are talking about the population that is downstream from Bonneville Dam. There are populations of sturgeon upstream in the Upper Columbia River and in the Snake Rivers, but none of those populations will be discussed here today. So we're talking from Bonneville Dam downstream, and then these fish have access to lower river tributaries and the Oregon and Washington coast and associated tributaries and up to Puget Sound. So I'll jump now into our stock status updates, starting with our legal size fish. And so when I refer to legal size abundance, I'm referring to those fish within the 38 to 54 inch fork length group. This is not necessarily the same size range that was open for harvest the last time it was open, but we use this 38 to 54 inch range so that we can compare through time the same group of fish and see how those trends are changing through time. And what I have shown here on this slide is our abundance that we've been estimating since 2010. This is done in our set line sampling effort. We capture and mark fish and recapture fish, and we apply a Peterson method of estimating the abundance of the entire population, and that's based on the number of fish that are caught within different length categories and then looking at how these different size fish are vulnerable to the gear, and then apportioning out the entire population into 1 centimeter length increments. So we can look at, using that estimate, what the abundance of fish would be between 38 to 54 inches fork length. And then the red markers on here are also projecting out a year in advance. So you can see through time the projected abundance, and then the actual estimated abundance after we've calculated it for each year has tracked fairly closely. And we see an increase in the estimated abundance of 38 to 54 inch fork length fish through time. But we also want to have more than one method to estimate this abundance. So this method B is just, it's using the same set line data, but instead of apportioning out to the entire population, it's recalculating that population estimate only for the fish that are caught within the 38 to 54 inch fork length. So we can compare those two methods and see that they are tracking through time fairly closely. And we do think that there has been an increase in abundance of the legal size fish. And then you'll note here that I projected out for 2018 what our estimated or what our projected abundance will look like. And this is estimated to be pretty similar to what the abundance estimates were for 2017. So we're not projecting an increase or a decrease, but a pretty stable population moving into 2018 for that legal size group. And then as an alternative check on that abundance estimate, we can also look at our catch preen effort of our 38 to 54 inch fork length fish. And with the same amount of effort, we've seen an increase in the catch of these fish since 2010, which supports our estimates of an increasing abundance of those legal size fish. So I'll move into our adult abundance. These are the fish that are greater than 65 inches fork length. And they're called adult fish because we believe that most fish, by the time they reach 65 inches, are reaching maturity and contributing the most genetic material back to the population in terms of spawning. And I will say that some fish may reach maturity before 65 inches, but by 65 inches, a majority of fish are likely mature. So this graph here is showing our three-year average abundance estimate, which is our more conservative estimate of abundance for our adult-sized fish. And we have seen an increasing trend over the last couple years. I've also included on this slide the desired status and conservation status that is provided by the Oregon Conservation Plan for the Lower Columbia River sturgeon. And according to the numbers set in that plan, we've moved out of the conservation status area and are trending towards the desired status. So this is good news, but we're not quite at that desired status level yet. I'm sorry?
Is that set line data as well?
Yes. So to assess the proportion of the population that are juveniles, we can look at our set line data and compare the number of fish that are captured between 21 to 37 inches fork length. Those are what we're categorizing as juvenile fish. And then those fish that are 38 inches and larger, and just look at it proportionally. And according to that same Oregon Conservation Plan, we would prefer there to be a majority of juveniles in the population. These are the fish that are going to replace our older fish as they mature out. And unfortunately, we've seen a decline in the proportion of juvenile fish through time. So it's great that we have increased adult abundance, but we also need to see that recruitment backfilling from the lower end. And this is indicative of productivity issues within the system. So what that set line data looks like apportioned out to the entire population for 2017 is this. To be clear, that many fish were not caught per length. This is expanded estimates from the number of fish that were captured and recaptured in the set line data. And so I've highlighted here that legal size group of 38 to 54 inches, and then our adult size group. So this is a pretty typical curve for a population that's long-lived such as this, but we would like to see a much larger hump in the juvenile end of this graph. On the lighter side, there were higher catch per net of age zero fish in 2017. We've had pretty low catch per net of age zero in the past couple years in the Lower Columbia River, which are again indicative of productivity issues within the river. And then the Willamette River also had the highest catch per net that was recorded since we began studying that in 2010. That is good for this year, and we hope to see more years of higher catch per net if we hope to bring up that juvenile group of fish. And so This is our legal size abundance forecast. So back to those legal size fish, if we use all of this information and attempt to model out a few years, what do we expect to see? The top blue line is our no harvest line, and then the red and green are indicate our 3 to 5% harvest rate. The expected forecast for our legal size fish out to 2018 should remain stable with no harvest or just a slight decline with a low amount of harvest. A slight bump up in 2019 with no harvest or about stable going to 2019 with a low amount of harvest, and then a slow decline in 2020 and 2021. And this has to do with that smaller proportion of juvenile sturgeon that we see. Now, even if the 2017 fish recruit to our set line gear, it'll take 5 to 10 years for them to move into this legal size class. So we won't see that effect for a few years because they're a very slow growing fish. So now I'll touch on some of the predation rate issues, and I apologize, this graph is not the best, but I'll walk you through it pretty carefully. The y-axis here is showing our daily number of California and Stellar Sea Lion spotted from Bonneville Dam, and this information is provided by the Army Corps of Engineers. And so the blue bars at the bottom here are the average number of California sea lions observed at the dam, and the green number the green bar is the average number of Stellar Sea Lions. And then the yellow and orange trend lines are showing the maximum number of sea lions on a daily basis seen at Bonneville Dam. And so, and this data is, I only have through 2016. The Army Corps hadn't published the 2017 report yet. But it's my understanding that there are still high numbers of sea lions at Bonneville Dam. And I have some notes here for that. So since 2002, the Army Corps of Engineers has monitored the pinniped activity during January through May, which is the salmon passage season. Seasonal consumption has grew to thousands of sturgeon, with a peak estimate of around 10,000 sturgeon consumed in the Lower Columbia River in one season. The states have conducted observations downriver to add to the Army Corps' estimates.
The left axis, that's thousands, right? So 10,000?
No, this is the daily. It's a daily mean abundance, so it is just 10 to 20.
Oh.
So it's not over the whole season, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
The consumption of sturgeon is down, or observations of sturgeon consumption at Bonneville is down despite the greater pinniped abundance. We don't exactly know why, but it could be that sturgeon are moving around and finding other areas to occupy where there's less predation. So I'll review now our 2017 retention fishery. The total catch guideline for the whole Lower Columbia River was 6,235 fish. This was broken up into the commercial fishery receiving 20% of the allocation and the sport fishery receiving 80%, and that's in the policy guidance. The commercial fishery had two major fisheries, the main stem, which was allocated 845 fish, and the select areas, which were allocated 400. The sport fishery was allocated 3,000 fish within the estuary, and 1,245 fish from Wana to Bonneville. And then the Willamette River was allocated 745 fish. However, no retention fishery was opened in the Willamette River in 2017. To review the actual catch within the commercial fishing, in the main stem, this was split into two seasons. Early fall harvested 485 fish, and late fall harvested 235 fish. In the select areas, there was a summer harvest of 266 fish and a fall of 237 fish. Sport fishing in the estuary was open for 5 days in June. There were an estimated 13,700 angler trips with a catch of 3,235 fish. And then from Wana to Bonneville, it was open for 3 days in October, with an estimated 10,000 angler trips and 430 fish captured. And so that number, that catch number is a little low for the guideline, and it's my understanding that water temperatures had cooled, and it's believed that that fishery was opened too late to get a better catch. So in summary, the 1,200 fish were brought to the market from the commercial fishery. This was about 98% of the commercial guideline. In the sport fishery, 3,665 fish were harvested, which was about 86% of the harvest guideline. And then I'd like to point out that there were 27,550 angler trips in the Lower Columbia River in 2017. That includes both retention and catch and release fisheries. If you compare that to just the catch and release fisheries in 2014 to 16, there were an average of 7,900 angler trips. So we significantly increased the number of anglers that were out on the water and the amount of trips that were taken to fish specifically for sturgeon. We met with our Columbia River Advisory Groups in early January to discuss the stock status and where we wanted to go with the fishery. And sport advisors were generally supportive of another retention fishery, and we're pretty happy with 2017. Our commercial advisors had more mixed reactions, but both groups were generally supportive of a conservative approach to managing the fishery. So in summary, our legal size abundance is projected to remain stable moving into 2018, and it has increased through time since 2010. Our adult abundance has been increasing, but I'll caution we're still not at that desired conservation level. And our juvenile proportion has been decreasing, which could be indicative of productivity issues in the system.
On that slide.
Sure.
Quick question. Just to be clear, so the definitions of legal, adult, and juvenile. Juvenile are the sub are the smaller than the 38 inch fish.
Yes. Thank you, Commissioner Baker. Thank you, Chair Smith. The juvenile fish are what we're capturing our set line to a minimum of about 21 inches up to about 37 inches fork length. So,
just a quick follow-up. So the fishery that we may open is for the sort of adolescent fish that that will be becoming adults, but there's enough of them as far as the department's concerned. We're mostly concerned about the youngsters that are coming up.
Yes.
Okay, thanks. I got it.
And then some more summary, the recruitment index. We saw improvement in 2017, so we believe that there was a good spawning year. However, we do still caution that there may be productivity issues in the system, and it'll take 5 to 10 years before we see these fish showing up into our harvestable size range. And then on another note, our number of angler trips with a retention and catch and release fishery was 27,550. This is six times the number of anglers that were present in 2016. So that's pretty impressive. So moving forward, we would like to, or we plan to work with Oregon to develop another short duration retention fishery similar to 2017. With that very conservative exploitation rate. And I'll compare this. In 2012, we had an exploitation rate around 16%. In 2013, our exploitation rate was around 13.6%. We closed it for a number of years. And last year, the actual harvested exploitation rate ended up around 3.5%. So a very low exploitation rate for the fishery. And that's what we would like to do again for 2018. And then also our current policy is set to expire December 31st this year. So whether we need to extend the current policy guidance or redraft a new version of that, we'll have to do that this year. So thank you very much for your time, and let me know if you have any questions.
First of all, some compliments to the staff on some excellent work here. This is the kind of management information that you'd really like to have when you get to a decision on whether or not to set a fishery and how much and all the rest of it. So the catch estimates, the active fishery management, staying within the quota, The kind of breakdown on the information, all the rest of it is just, in my opinion, money well spent here by the Commission to support this kind of research and management. A question on the juvenile proportion business. So on slide 14, you show the zero-age fish actually increasing. You've got the adult fish, the spawner-sized fish, increasing. And so those seem to be consistent with logic. You get more spawning, you get more zero-age fish. That should translate into more recruitment. That all sounds positive. But the proportion, the using a proportion instead of numbers, as an extreme, if you had a superb situation and you had 50,000 adult spawners, your proportion of juveniles would still be small for quite some period of time, depending on your definition of juveniles. So the proportion, the use of a proportion seems a little bit confusing. I wonder if you could speak to that.
Sure. And thank you, Commissioner McIsaac and Chair Smith. When you look at the population structure, if you have an aging population but no recruitment at the back end, it's not going to sustain a long population to maintain a fishery. So it is great that we have an increasing abundance of adult fish, but with productivity issues, we've seen a decrease in the juveniles, which is what will fill into that legal size in the future. So that's where when we forecast out and we see that number dipping for the legal size fish, that's because our juvenile proportion is decreasing. So there's you need to have, like, if you have more adult fish and you have good water quality and all the conditions are right, then you should see increased recruitment, and you should see a large amount of young fish in the system. So it's just one of the many things that we're looking at, and it's just one concern that we have with the population moving forward. So it is good that we had a good age zero catch in 2017, and we just hope to see a few more of those years.
On the productivity issue, I've heard it's been speculated that the adult sturgeon are using spawning areas that are not their preferred or the ideal, and they're moving into other areas to avoid the sea lions, and that results in less productivity. Is there, have you found that to be true, or is that our best guess on the low productivity aspect of this?
Thank you, Commissioner Graybell, and thank you, Chair Smith. Right now, we don't know if they are, in fact, moving to other areas to spawn. There are theories that they may be, and we do see increased recruitment out of the Willamette. So whether it's having a negative effect on recruitment or not, if they're spawning in a different area, I can't answer that. They are a very long-lived fish, so I'll give you that. If it takes the fish 25 years to reach that adult size class, they still have another 70 years to spawn, and they'll spawn every 3 to 5 years if conditions are okay. Keep that in mind too, is that they are a long-lived fish and they're programmed to weather out poor water conditions, and as long as we can maintain a strong spawning group of fish and improve productivity conditions, we will be able to rebound those juvenile fish.
Yeah, I could. You covered some of it, but I've been queasy watching the decline of the juveniles as I've sat on the commission, and that seems to be the trend. And we saw a good spawner year, but we haven't seen a trend yet there. And I just wonder if the spawner results are enough to say that we're going to, if we do see a trend that it's actually improving, that we're going to see a turnaround in that juvenile curve, or if there are other factors known or unknown that contribute to later mortality and loss to that population, and it's not solely just having good spawning.
Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn and Chair Smith. We do know that, you know, pinniped predation has been an issue, and that's likely some of the concern with population. There are likely other unknown causes of mortality, but we don't. I don't know what else at this time to answer for that.
Is water quality?
So growth rates have changed through time, and depending on temperature and prey availability, these fish will grow faster or slower, and that can affect the number of eggs that they produce and what their spawning success will be. And we don't have a lot of data on that right now. So, but those are all issues. If there's a productivity issue at the lower end, it can affect the whole chain. So,
yeah, I'm done.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On slide 19, you have some catch estimates for the estuary and the upriver fishery. So some of us have heard folks talking about when you're fishing in the estuary, there's river fish that are kind of darker and skinnier, and then you have these what people call ocean fish that are much more robust, and they're very light colored, and people say they're coming in from the ocean. And that in the months of May, June, and July, that there can be quite an abundance of sturgeon in the estuary. On this slide, you see a five-day season catching 3,200 fish, and the upriver fishery catching only 400 fish with, you know, not that big a difference in the angler trips. So my question is, what can you say about this river versus ocean fish during the month of May and June and July, and are there time frames when the catch rates could be explosive, and that if you really want to optimize your angler trips, you probably ought to stay away from fishing at that time of year?
Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac, Chair Smith. So there is a lot of individual variation in these fish as far as being a river fish or an ocean fish, but all of them will migrate back into freshwater to spawn at some point. And so we do see our highest catch of larval fish within June, and what you see in May is those water temperatures slowly increasing up to those spawning temperatures. And in June, when they hit 14 to 15 degrees, these fish really kick it to move upriver and begin spawning. So I would expect to see a higher catch of sturgeon occurring at those warmer temperatures. And I think that that's been reflected in the angler harvest within June last year, where if you notice, they were just a little bit over the guidance for the estuary area because of those warm temperatures. So fishing at a slightly cooler temperature would slow down the catch and likely increase the amount of time that anglers can be on the water. And it's definitely something to consider when planning another fishery.
And just as a follow-up, so in the years when it's only a catch-and-release fishery and you look at May and June, does that data suggest that there are some extremely high catch periods as you get into that warmer late June anchovy type of time frame?
I don't currently have that data in front of me, and so I'm not sure, but I would strongly predict that it would say the same thing. The water temperature is increasing. You would see higher catch rates of sturgeon.
A curiosity question. When in the ocean, are sharks a natural predator?
Thank you, Chair Smith. And yes, they will predate upon sturgeon. They have more natural predators than just sea lions. So getting out to the ocean probably provides them better quality food, and they grow a little bit faster, but they are subject to shark attack.
I was curious, is there a size that the pinnipeds tend to predate on, or is it all age structure?
Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn and Chair Smith. I believe that they predate, the stellars, I've heard, will predate upon pretty much any size fish. We have observations of 8-foot sturgeon being taken down by a group of 3 stellars, sea lions, that work together. It's my understanding that the California sea lions tend to fight and squabble and can't take down a fish maybe that big, but the stellars will group together and take it down.
Oh, those Californians. Any other questions? That was very interesting.
Yeah, thank you.
We do have some public input for item number 10. So Butch Smith and Greg King, please. And thanks, Laura and Cindy. That was very interesting. We broke for lunch on little shrimp, and we start with sturgeon. So, I mean, smorgasbord. Butch.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I could read the testimony that worked this morning in the Oregon Commission, if you'd like. But anyway, I'd like to welcome Laura to what I think is probably the world's best staff, knowledgeable staff on sturgeon, and we're lucky to have them both in the state of Oregon and Washington. Literally, second to none. So, anyways, I'd like to welcome her and hope she stays a very long time, like our other staff, that she's filling some pretty good shoes by some retirements that just happened, at least in the state of Washington. So I know she will do exceptional work. First of all, my name is Butch Smith. I represent the Owako Charter Association today. And before I get too far into what I'm going to say is I want to thank you for last year. I mean, that was a phenomenal thing. Approximately almost 15,000 angler trips in 5 days to the estuary is absolutely phenomenal. And the coastal communities that I represent truly sent me here to thank you. The Astoria, Chinook, Owako, Long Beach, Hammond, Warrington. It was an amazing thing. I knew it must be sturgeon season. Here Butch is before the commission. I hardly ever show up for anything else, but here I am. And I knew that the case. And I love catch and release fisheries. I think those have their place in time. But you can see, just in the estuary, it was almost in 1 year, 5 days, was almost double the 3 year previous on catch and release. So this is how important that we take the time to craft these seasons where we can, where conservation is always at the forefront and are able to harvest some fish. It just a huge shot in the arm to my area. So, a lot of times we like to yell at you and call you names and all that good stuff, either in front of you or behind your back. But this is not the case. This is truly a success story. And I don't want to waste much more of your time, but I would just like to say, since I know a little information from our partners on the Oregon side, is we do what we did last year: delegate the authority to the director and the staff. Welcome, Director Story. And let's see if we can craft another conservation-minded season. A couple points of a little thing, a little bit we can improve on, and it's no complaint, it's just a little bit, we can always improve. We don't let the politics of the day take over like we did last year. We had a little season, sun came up, the river didn't run dry. It worked. It was a success. So maybe we can determine what we're going to have this year. Maybe by the middle of March, so people can plan instead of a couple days before the season opened up, like last year. I would personally like to see, so we can get more bang for our fish that we've got to fish on. If we start a little earlier, mid-May or so, we can make that portion of fish last a lot longer. Or not a lot longer, that's a relative term. but I'm pretty sure we can get some more days out of it, and that's important to my fishing community, our fishing communities down the estuary. And so those are kinds of things I look forward in the next couple months working with staff and the director and welcome assistant director to the club. I know you guys have worked here many years, but now you're out front, so put your bulletproof vest on. And and so anyway, those are the things. And so I think it's important that we continue this, keep the conservation in mind between the 3% and 5%. You got a great sturgeon team that on both sides of the river, and so. I think I'll stop with that and answer any questions. And thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thanks for the nice words, Cousin Bruce. I always appreciate a good word.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With regard to the timing of last year's fishery in June versus you heard the line of questioning about explosive catches potentially, do you have any recommendations or insights on that?
I have about 35 years of knowledge on that very issue. We were very fortunate last year that we had high water. High water tends to slow the catches down. Temperature, bait stays out, whatever the reasons may be. And we had a lot of high water. We can't depend on high water this year. And so that's the other reason I want to start in May. Typically, May is a slower month to start fishing in, where June, for example, if we would have gone one more week when the temperatures went up, the bait came in June last year, that fisheries might have been out of control in 2 days, comparatively to the catches that we had 2016, 15, 16, where we were catching and releasing up to 70 fish a day. Fortunately, we didn't see that kind of fishing last year because of the high water. It wasn't the fish weren't, you know, available. They just hadn't come in yet from the migration of the ocean. So that is another reason for my reasoning and starting a little bit early. I want this to be a successful experience both for anglers and the department. I don't want any black eyes on any of us because going out and planning a fisheries and having over in a couple days is not advantageous to any of us, and harder to control. So, Mr. McIsaac, Commissioner. I've been through a lot of hats. We've had a lot of hats over the years. But anyway, the later you get into June, or the later you get into May, some years, the more explosive the fisheries can be. It's an amazing fisheries.
Thank you. And Greg, you, and then Ron.
Good afternoon, commissioners, and welcome, Joe, to the staff. And Amy too. Great presentation, Laura. I learned quite a bit on this. That was a great fishery down there in the coast, and it was a good fishery up there around the Longview Kelso area where I fished it, and we did pretty good. We didn't meet our quota, but that's okay. You know, those fish seem to up there. They seem to not behave the same as they do with a little bit colder conditions and stuff, but all in all, it was a good fishery. I think it brought in 10,000 angler hours or something like that, the report said. I might make some recommendations to Laura on this. Are we doing anything with the callots? Oh, I'm Greg King, friends of the callots ad hoc too. So are we doing any testing in the callots? Could the callots be a potential nursery? I know before when we had a catch and keep retention season in 09, 010, I think, Cindy might know when we had that. I know guys were catching keeper sturgeon up at Barrier Dam on the callots. So are these fish producing juveniles or zero Are they producing any offspring up there? Guys will catch incidental sturgeon on the callus springer fishing in the spring. Sometimes that's all they're catching is sturgeon in the lower portion. So I just suggest that we might look into some of that callus stuff and see what's going on. Maybe there, because we're doing the Willamette too, and I think that's probably coming out of Oregon. But you know, let's see what's going on the callus there too. You know, and thanks for letting us have that fishery.
Yep. You're the last one of this group, Ron.
Well, a little smiling going on today. First off, I want to say thank you to the commission. The Ridgefield meeting was a pretty tense meeting, and I want to really thank you, and I want to give you some results. So going into the boat show, which we've done for I don't know how many years, forever, it's kind of weird not seeing Larry there in the back of the boat. We kidded about putting a cardboard cutout in one of the boats. But going into the boat show, just before it, people were doom and gloom. It was really bad. I mean, really bad. And talking with Larry's brother before the show a little while, they'd had 6 boat cancellations and hundreds of thousands of dollars. People weren't going. Edmonds, 35% of the boats pulled out of there. And then we had the meeting. You guys took action. You went behind the closed doors. And we didn't hear from you for a while. But we knew something was going on. And the outcome was the resignation and the harvest management plan to possibly be reworked. And the boat show couldn't have had a bigger turnaround than happened. People were happy. I was there with my wife on the opening day. We set up our booth. People were upbeat. They were lifted. They were positive. You restored hope. It's awesome what you did. So first, I want to say thank you for what you did. I think your brother's place sold like 32 boats after that. 32 boats. So first and foremost, thank you for restoring people's faith in the commission process. And then I just real quickly on this Columbia River sturgeon, this was closed down when there weren't very many fish to catch. Last year, it was up quite a bit. And you allowed people the opportunity to go fishing. And this almost 15,000 angler trips is just outstanding. But I think what it does, it also brings people's positiveness to the communities up and down the river. Our Puget Sound anglers, they go down there and they go fishing. And I think it's real important that we establish a real good sales, license sales for the department so they can have a stable budget and be able to plan and run the agency the way it needs to be. But we've kind of gotten down to the point where the budget and things like that get leveraged on what fisheries open, and that's not good. I think what you're doing is by creating opportunity when conservation goals are met, I think it sends a really good message to the general public that you want to make sure that people get to get the best of Washington. So I just want to say thank you again, and I think you're doing the right thing, and if we can keep this fishery going, it's a great thing. So, thank you.
Thanks, Ron. Appreciate the nice words. Bring cookies next time if you want. Okay, that brings us up to item number 11 on the agenda, and that's clarifying the limits of keeping salmon for personal use.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. The last slide of the presentation here, or second to the last slide, has some next steps involved. And so as a matter of a policy decision on the commission here, there might be a question of whether or not there be a season or not. And the staff seems to be comfortable here with having a season from what it looks like on this slide and what we've heard. And they're also looking for some new policy for 2019. So in terms of providing the staff some guidance from the policy level to maybe delegate to the director to work with Oregon to do something for a season or maybe not for a season, it seems like there's a little bit of a policy choice there. And maybe some policy guidance on coming back with a new policy. So I've done a little bit of thinking about that, and normally this kind of guidance is just verbal, which I could give verbally. I've written down a few thoughts here, and the staff has also got something that could be shown that says the same thing. It's pretty simple, really, but it might be useful, first of all, to have that guidance come forward, and then if it's in writing, maybe it's easier on the staff to come back to. But my perspective on guidance here would be to have the acting director be delegated the responsibility for negotiating with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to achieve a concurrent regulations for a retention season with approximately the same quota as 2017, with essentially the same management features as 2017, with the exception of maybe a timing for an earlier season in May. So the thrust of that guidance is to, yes, have a season. And then secondly, to have the staff work with their colleagues across the river and to get some participation from the Columbia River Sport and Commercial Advisory Bodies and provide at either the November or December meeting an update of policy C-3001 for another five-year period. So, again, this is normally verbal guidance. If there's utility to seeing it in writing, you know, there is. And I don't know that it's necessary to make a motion on guidance, but if there's disagreement, I'd be glad to do that. And in terms of essentially the same management features, maybe just asking the director to be cognizant of optimizing the number of angler trips. We heard some public testimony about a 1 or 2 day season. If it's timed not appropriately, we'd like to optimize that the best you can, and still have the same features of an upriver split that's designated as a separate quota. So that's just a perspective on guidance there.
Good. Yeah. Commissioner Kerr.
Having sat in on these Columbia River discussions for many, many years and learned a lot, and the cooperation with Oregon has been very, very critical and very, very important. I think the two states are working together, and the conservation approach is very, very needed, and we'll keep our eye on that, but I support Commissioner McIsaac's guidance.
So I've used the words up our game a few times, and I think that we are working to be a more professional commission. Sometimes when I say things like that, that can be misperceived. I mean better than we have been, which has been good. I fully support both the substance, but what I'm speaking to today is the process of this kind of written guidance. When we're asked to give guidance, I think it helps the people who need to implement it that it be written down, and I think it helps us if we remember what was said without going back and listening to words. This also goes along with Commissioner Thorburn's point this morning that when we're going to amend the minutes, we should amend the minutes in writing. So I agree with both sides of this. Thank you, Don.
I think we need to really look hard at what the research is telling us on this. I really appreciate what you said and what it means to those communities down there, Butch. But you know, the numbers are not all that great for our sturgeon populations down there, and the trends do not support. We're just not seeing that many juveniles move into that keepable range. We wrestled with this when I first came on the commission. The numbers of sturgeon that are available to harvest have just not been there or indicate to be on the decline. Whenever possible, within very conservative conservation parameters, if we can provide opportunity, I'm very much in favor of that. However, I think we need to really look hard at what the research is telling us about these populations before we recommend a conservation fishery, if we're really going to be considering conservation as our primary guideline.
Any other?
Well, I guess right now we are meeting the conservation goals, so at least with the legal size fish. So I would agree that the opportunity is there, but as I look at our trends, a couple of them, the projections based on our juvenile population and what it's been doing, and the trend that we've been seeing and are predicting, I would just caution that I don't think we're going to be meeting conservation goals of legal-sized fish in a few years if these projections are correct. And I think we need to be realistic that we may not have the opportunity in the near future, at least for a few years. And it's kind of out of all of our control from what I heard from the presentation this morning and what we know. I hope that we can learn more about what is going on. 'Cause I'm just concerned that it isn't solely spawning that's going to turn this trend around. And if we could learn more about what's going on. Predation, yeah. Is there more? And is there something that we can do to provide us with a stable fishery in the future? So.
Yeah. Thanks. I'm just looking at, excuse me, and I guess that we've taken that PowerPoint off, but I'm looking at slide 16, and I do, maybe you can pull that back up. Sorry.
You want it.
Sorry. Okay. Yeah, slide 16. Or 15. 15, I'm sorry. Yeah. So that slide gives me some comfort. I think it is a very valid point, and I know Commissioner Mankin, he always stressed that excuse me, the failure to see or the declining in the juvenile class is concerning. But I can support this 3% harvest fishery because I think you really if you had no harvest, yeah, that would be ideal. But I think even with a 3% harvest, based on these abundant forecasts looking to the future, I think it's justifiable. But I do certainly the commission, and I'm sure the Oregon Commission folks too will be looking, following this very closely moving forward. We don't want to be in a position where we were a couple of years ago where there was a moratorium because of the lack of legal-sized fish. So just something to keep in mind. But I know Butch and others in your community how valuable this fishery is, so there's always a balancing act in the management, conservation, and needs for social needs, society's needs. So, thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner. So I think that gives you an idea of where we're coming from and all that. But well done, and welcome to the department, Laura. Yes. And we look forward to more interaction. And thank you for. Joe, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair. Helpful if we had that guidance in writing, and so if the commission's willing, to whether it takes a vote or not, I don't think so, but so if what the commission is doing is accepting Commissioner McIsaac's written guidance, I would appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's consensus on that. Okay.